When Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was a student, he asked whomever he met to chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. In this way, he inundated the whole town of Navadvip with the chanting of Hare Krishna. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The present Navadvip Dam is but a part of the whole of Navadvip. Navadvip means nine islands. These nine islands, which occupy an area of land estimated at 32 square miles, are surrounded by different branches of the Ganges. In all nine of those islands of Navadvip area, there are different places for cultivating devotional service. It is stated in Srimad Bhagavatam that there are Navavidha Bhakti, nine different activities of devotional service: Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Bandhanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmanivedanam. There are different islands in the Navadvip area for cultivation of these nine varieties of devotional service. They are as follows: Antadvip, Simantadvip, Kodadrumadvip, Madhyadvip, Koladvip, Ritudvip, Chanudvip, Mudadrumadvip, and Rudradvip. According to the settlement map, our ISKCON Navadvip Center is situated on the Rudradvip Island. Below Rudradvip in Antardvip is Mayapur. There, Sri Jagannath Mishra, the father of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, used to reside. In all these different islands, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as a young man, used to lead the Sankirtan party. He thus inundated the entire area with waves of love of Krishna. Om Jnanati Mirandasya Jnanam Jana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Dena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nitananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivashadi Gaura Bhakti Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Rama Rama. Again, the translation. When Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was a student, he asked whomever he met to chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. In this way, he inundated the whole town of Navadvip with the chanting of Hare Krishna. There are a lot of controversies surrounding certain activities, for instance, and practices of Gaudiya Vaishnavas and the Krishna consciousness movement. And actually, Gaudiya Vaishnavas, maybe to be a little more clear, actually, the followers of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. One of them is, Where is Mayapur? Where is Sridhar Mayapur? For quite a long time, prior to Bhaktivinoda Thakur's time, Mayapur is now called, what's not generally refers to as Prachini Mayapur. Mayapur is worshipped on the other side of the river. So who's been to Mayapur, devotees? A lot of devotees. I mean, so you know, you cross, you take the boat over as Jalangi hits the Ganges, joins the Ganges. That's called Ishodhyan. That area, Ishodhyan Garden, and you cross over to Navadvip town or Navadvip city. And then again, if you go north, then there's what is still being worshipped by a certain class of people as Mayapur, as the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The original Mayapur, according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Jagannath Das Babaji, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Srila Prabhupada, and followers of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, is where we see it now, where the yoga pit is, not far from ISKCON's Mayapur Chandradoya Mandir. And we accept that as actually being the birthplace. There are, in one sense, sort of valid reasons why there's that misunderstanding that was on the other side, because the Ganges moves. The Ganges moves a lot. When I first went to Mayapur, which is going back more than 40 years, right now, if you know, you walk 50 yards off Bhaktisthanta Saraswati Thakur Road and you're at the Ganga. And it was even actually closer at Srila Prabhupada's centennial. It was right by the road. But at that time, we would walk a kilometer at least, maybe even as much as a mile, to get to this side of the, our side of the Ganges. The Ganges was so far over to the Navadvip side. And that's the way with rivers. Rivers move a lot, and because they move, therefore they inundate villages, they move earth in different places, different directions. And Chaitanya Bhagavat and other scriptures talk about the movement of the Ganges and that this holy place will be lost in due course of time. Well, Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes about it a lot in Navadvip Dham Mahatmya and Navadvip Dham Bhavataranga, that the Ganges shifts. And as it shifts, certain places manifest, other places then become lost. Once again, as we were speaking the other day, this is the Dham submits itself to the natural actions of the material world. And although Navadvipa is eternal and continues to exist, it's always there. Even when this planet disappears, Navadvipa still remains untouched. But it appears to those with conditioned senses that it becomes covered. So because of this shifting, then naturally, at a certain point, what is now Mayapur was actually covered. And then Ganges moved away. So certain, either due to, because people were opportunistic in order to have a place that they could label as the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which therefore becomes a source of engagement, income, maintenance for devotees, pandas, another place sprang up. 500 years is a long time. We don't even know, for instance, when many of our acharyas were born or left their bodies. We don't even know exact dates. We don't know a lot of information. Don't know a lot of information. If I ask, well, there'll be some devotees here, but if I ask when was Radha Gokulananda installed, then some devotees may not know what to speak of, even more specific information. I know when I was writing Navaraja Mahima, which was 15 years after Radha Shyamasundar came to Hungary, I couldn't find a devotee who actually knew the specific day on which some of the deities actually came, even though they were there. The devotees are still alive. What to speak of when they're not alive? Then it's even harder to get information. So the history of history is an interesting topic. Devamrita Maharaj has sort of a series of very interesting seminars as to how history evolves in the absence of real knowledge. It becomes more superstition or the product of all kinds of other ideas and ideologies that people have. So now there are two birthplaces of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There's only one, which is the real one. How do we know it's the real one? Because Mahajana Jina Gata Sapanta. We go by the strength of what Jagannath Das Babaji, and you all know the story, when Bhaktivinoda Thakur brought him there, he says, yes, this is Gaura Janmabhumi, this is Nimai Janmabhumi, this is the birthplace of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And that's the evidence. But in order to substantiate that, Bhaktivinoda Thakur went through many, many maps dating back hundreds of years to actually show that, yes, according to the descriptions of texts like Bhakti Ratnakar especially, as well as Chaitanya Bhagavat, that this is the proper place of Sridhar Mayapur. It couldn't be on that side of the river. It has to be on this side of the river in order for it to fit. We don't need empirical evidence. For us, the best evidence is the evidence of self-realized souls, because empirical evidence is subject to defect, whereas the evidence of great souls, there's no question of any defect. That's what makes them great, or that's one of the symptoms of their greatness. So that's one controversy. It becomes such a heated controversy that Bhaktivinoda Thakur and his Diksha Guru had a disagreement over this. In fact, one was more than just a disagreement, but it wasn't particularly that Bhaktivinoda Thakur was disagreeing. Interestingly, he was very submissive to his spiritual master, although Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur considered that his spiritual master was less spiritually advanced than his disciple. Well, nonetheless, Bipin Bihari Goswami, the Diksha Guru of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he was one of those who opined that that side of the river is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's birthplace. And, of course, Bhaktivinoda Thakur established that my guru is wrong. It's on this side of the river. And while Bhaktivinoda Thakur was willing to live with that dichotomy, his guru wasn't. So, again, history is not exactly so black and white. Sometimes it says that they completely parted ways. Sometimes that, and that his guru rejected him. There are a certain class of pseudo-Vaishnavas who use this to prove, to argue the fact that therefore, Gaurakishore Das Bhaktivinoda Thakur was not an authorized Vaishnava. He's rejected by his guru. And, of course, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who followed him, and therefore all of us are an Upasampradaya. So that's one controversy. And on another sour note, The other is, why do we chant Hare Krishna? Because the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra isn't actually included in any of the texts of biographies of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But here's one, Krishna Nam. Now, what does Krishna Nam refer to? Krishna Mantra refers to the Diksha Mantras that Vaishnavas give. Krishna Nam refers to those who are conversant with the different names of Lord Krishna to the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And of course, in Chaitanya Charitamrita leaves that up for argument because the Maha Mantra is in itself not spelt out. But in Chaitanya Bhagavat it is, twice. Twice Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, you chant this mantra. And he says it. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. That was a, and of course, then there's, of course, another version of the controversy is that the Hare Krishna mantra should not be chanted aloud. It should be chanted quietly. And that was a real group of Vaishnavas, really pseudo-Vaishnavas, Sahaja Vaishnavas, who came up in the time of Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, whose acharya concocted a mantra. If you've been to India, you've all heard it. I won't repeat it here in Srila Prabhupada's presence. But it was a combination of Lord Chaitanya and Radha Krishna's names. And they chant the Hare Krishna mantra, but only in japa. And their acharya said, no, it's not meant to be chanted loud because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't chant it aloud. Although we have evidence to the contrary. In Rupa Goswami and his prayers, he again says, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu chanted Krishna Nam very loudly. So all of these things are there. And this is 500 years, so figure out what's going to happen in 5,000 years or as time goes on and we're going further and further into Kali Yuga. And that's why it's very important to write things down. The other day we were at the program at the Mulji's home, they were talking about how Jiva Goswami wrote down our philosophy. Writing things down is a very important thing because then it's there. For instance, nowadays people have written contracts, agreements. In many countries, I think also in the UK, I know in Hungary, a verbal contract is as good as a written one, as long as you can prove it. It means you have sufficient witnesses to say that this agreement was made verbally. Obviously, when you don't have any other witnesses, you've got problems. And even if you have witnesses, then witnesses can also misunderstand what was said. I don't know, you've all probably played Chinese whispers and know how things can go around very, very quickly. And what's said by one person in 5 minutes goes around and becomes a whole different story. Because we have imperfect senses. Well, I thought he said that, but maybe he didn't. Maybe they really actually said something else. But when it's in black and white, and it's a good expression, black and white, when it's in black and white, then it's not much to argue about. So nowadays it's good to write things down and make agreements like that. It makes for agreement. It avoids conflict, and in Kali Yuga, conflict. You can have conflict over everything. And of course, although people have contracts in writing, but nonetheless they all go to court about what actually that contract really meant. So it's still not 100%. But writing down history is such an important thing so that people will have the benefit of events, especially those events which relate to teachings of Krishna consciousness, history of the Krishna consciousness movement. One of our supporter academics praised the devotees, which is pretty good. We don't get praised often by academics, but praised that as soon as Srila Prabhupada left, then of course the GBC mandated Satsarupa Maharaj to write a biography, and so many other devotees wrote, Harisori Prabhu has his, and then you get devotees, Kormi Prabhu, Prabhupada's visit to Australia, Malaysia, there's so many, which is very important, because Prabhupada's disciples immediately writing down what they remember of Srila Prabhupada. But even then there's disagreement. I was just, someone on the RGBC conference raised this question of mushrooms. Are they pro, are they against? What did Prabhupada say? And the end result was that even though Prabhupada once, seemed when he was on a plane and there was some mushrooms in the salad, and he said, well, it's not so bad. But the conclusion is that generally, by Manu Samhita and other Dharma Shastra, mushrooms are not to be eaten or offered, eaten by Vaishnavas, offered to the Lord. Even though something may be good, just like garlic and onions. Who was it? Rahu and Ketu. Rahu and Ketu at the time of the churning of the ocean, and Mohini Murti was distributing the nectar. Then Bhagavatam says how Rahu and Ketu came in between the sun and the moon, and they drank a drop of nectar, as a result of which they would have become immortal, which is not good because they were demons. So the Lord cut their heads off, but the nectar was already in their mouths. So so their heads became immortal, and therefore they're still there. The bodies, their bodies were gone. Their bodies are finished. The nectar that dripped out of their heads, because if your head gets cut off, whatever went in your mouth comes out the other side, turned into garlic and onions. And it's nectar. In other words, garlic and onions have nectarine potency. Doctors will tell you that they're very healthy. On the other hand, because they came out of the heads of demons, they're obviously not fit for offering to the Lord, and they're not fit for being eaten by Vaishnavas. So although it says that your body may become very fit by eating onions and garlic, like the body of a demon, but your consciousness will become similarly affected. So as we were talking yesterday, different foods have different effects according to the modes of nature that they're in. The prasadam of demons is not a good thing, even though it may be nectar. And it's nectar. Oh yes, controversy. Well, back to the mushrooms. But the controversy wasn't so much about the mushrooms. The controversy was that yes, accidentally, just as Prabhupada, you know, accidentally ate the mushroom, or he once accidentally drank a little champagne thinking it was 7-Up. You know, they come on the plane when you're in business class, because they don't do it in economy, and you know, they give you drinks. And I had it happen once on my way from Hungary. Some gave it, and I thought, and I smelled it. So that smelled horrible. And I looked at the person sitting next to me, and I was dressed like this. And he shook his head. He said, "That's not for you." So I thought, okay. And so in some instance, I think it was either in Delhi or somewhere, Prabhupada was at someone's home. And Harisara Prabhu recalled that there was onions in the food. And in order not to embarrass his host, devotee said, "Prabhupada, there's onions in the sabji." Prabhupada said, "I don't see any onions." And he just ate. On the other hand, Malati said, "I was there, and it was a kadasi, and it was peas, not onions." So once again, you've got two witnesses, first-hand witnesses, and someone says it's onions, someone else says it's peas. So that's why even when you write things down, not necessarily remember. So controversies will abound, and in Kali Yuga, people will fight over controversies. But here, what is clear is that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is yare deke tarikaha. So wherever he's going, he's getting everyone to chant Krishna's names. And the previous verse, Kaviraj Prabhupada is talking about Jiva Goswami's Namamrita Vyakarana, which is a grammar book solely based on Krishna's names. So chant Hare Krishna. And that was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's, after having received initiation. This is all just a summary, I guess a forward summary of Chaitanya Charitamrita. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu induced everyone to chant Krishna Nam. And what was the end result? The end result was that in this way the whole universe, the whole town, the universe comes a little later, that the whole town of Navadvip was also similarly inundated with the chanting. That Navadvip, for devotees who have gone there, here Srila Prabhupada talks about the Ganges. First of all, the area of Navadvip is 32 square miles. Then there's Godamandala, which is a large area, which is 168 square miles. These are all similar dimensions that you find in Vrindavan. So Vrindavan also has this same type of area, and the Navadvip is corresponds to or Mayapur corresponds to Sri Vrindavan Dham. The difference between the two being solely in terms of the difference between Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Radha and Krishna. And that Radha and Krishna, their pastimes, their personalities, characterize a very extraordinary, this word madhurya is used, sweetness, which you can translate or understand in different contexts as a very humanness in terms of a sort of a divine concept. The life that we live here in this material world is very human, very ordinary. It has some very unique and very sweet characteristics by comparison to the divinity that is experienced in Vaikuntha. That divinity makes for a certain sense of formality. That formality or majesty, it obstructs the free flow of relationships. So Prabhupada gives the example. A high court judge, a politician, when he's in office, everyone approaches him in a very formal way. Family members don't have that type of formality. Why? That's called sweetness. When the formality is absent, then the relationships become mature, or they have a mature taste, and the taste of something is sweet. It's constantly used. The same term is being used by acharyas all the time. And that is a mood that's prevalent in Vrindavan. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's prevalent mood is described here. Jare deke tare kahe. Kaha Krishna naam. Giving. The whole idea is that tare, to him, deke, he sees. Kaha, speak, Krishna naam. So, bhashaila, inundated, to give to other people. When the people exchange amongst themselves, they become very absorbed in their personal interaction and in the taste, in the happiness, symptoms of happiness or the joy, the ecstasy that comes from that type of relationship. So tasting that type of relationship is what is characteristic of Vrindavan. But here is something else. It's not so much how much am I actually benefiting, but how much am I giving to those who don't have benefit. It isn't that you know the terminology. This is called Audarya, and this is called Madhurya. Madhurya means sweetness. Audarya means mercy. Vrindavan is called Madhurya Dham, and Navadvip is called Audarya Dham. And both are identical places, but there's a difference in the emphasis in the two. In Madhurya, there's Audarya. And in Audarya, there's also Madhurya, or the both are eternally wed together. They exist simultaneously. But here, one takes prominence, and here the other one takes prominence. And because it's prominent, therefore, that's what you see. For instance, in the light spectrum, all different colors exist. And yet sometimes with one type of filter, then you can turn this, well, right now the light is sort of neutral, it's yellowish, but you could make it here green, and everything would be predominantly green. You could make it blue, you could make it red. All the other colors are also present, but one will dominate over the others. Similarly, in this Maturya, it is full of Audarya. It is full of the spirit of giving. But the giving is going between those who have. So Radha and Krishna, Krishna and the cowherd boys, Mother Yashoda and Krishna, Krishna and the cows, they're exchanging love between them, and they're constantly giving. The motivation is to give pleasure, is to give pleasure to the other person. So Krishna is trying to please his very devotees, and his devotees try to please him. Here is something else. Here's Navadvip, which is full of shaktas, which is full of non-devotees. They're worshippers of Durga Devi. They're materialistic people. They're academics. Navadvip was a university town, although it didn't necessarily have university buildings like we have now. But the universities are on the banks of the Ganga. And that's, and Kaviraj Goswami also, but more Vrindavan Das Thakur and others describe how the whole banks of the Ganges was just lined with different teachers with their students. And there would be a ghat, and they would sit under trees. And if you have experience in Mayapur, there's practically no time except for rainy season where you can't sit outside, and it's extremely pleasant, and so why be inside? A house is a jail. A building is a jail. It just means that you can't enjoy the natural environment. You have to create an artificial environment. You have to create artificial light. You have to have walls. You have to keep out the elements. You have to keep up. But actually, it's not the ideal way of living. The ideal way of living is spend as much time as possible in the great outdoors. Of course, the great outdoors is motorways here in downtown London, so that's not so great. But ideally, and that's the way towns were, even when we read about great cities like Dwarka, you talk about these huge, broad avenues, and parks are everywhere, and lakes, and peacocks, and swans, and so many other things. So it's different than a asphalt jungle, as the terminology goes. So all of these people are materialistic people, and they didn't know about devotional service. They didn't know about the supremacy of Lord Krishna. They were worshippers of Kali. If you watch that Nadia Nimai, then you see just Gopal Chapal and his cohorts. They're all worshippers of Kali. And of course, that's still going on in Calcutta, in Bengal especially, unfortunately. So, but here's this mood. This is a different mood. This is a mood of giving. It's a mood of giving to people who don't have what I have. And by doing that, that then actually increases, gives us that same mood of maturya. Because in this mood of giving to others, in this mood of benefiting others, then the other verse which I referred to earlier, jare deke tare kaha Krishna upadesh. So you talk about Krishna, you give Krishna's message, you give the Hare Krishna mantra to others, by that one becomes very much enriched. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in one of his many sayings, he says that you will realize your swarup in the, through the process of Nam Sankirtan, by giving Krishna consciousness to others, your swarup will become manifest. In other words, you don't have to worry just about yourself and go off and do some solitary bhajan in order to realize your own spiritual identity and neglect others. I'll come to that. Not that that should be neglected. But it will come. And it will come by the grace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because katanchana smite yasmin shukaram dukaram babet vipiparitasya sri chaitanya namamitvam. Things that are very difficult become very easy by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's grace. And self-realization on the path that Srimad Bhagavatam gives is very difficult. To attain the perfection, the siddha that is there in Srimad Bhagavatam, to attain the Braja Bhakti that is being glorified in Srimad Bhagavatam is a very difficult task. There are many Puranic references to, for instance, the Veda, the personified Vedas. And in the prayers to the personified Vedas, 80th chapter of a 10th canto, and Prabhupada explains it in length, Jiva Goswami, in his commentary, he explains on one of the verses how the personified Vedas pray and make reference in order for them to actually attain the bodies of Brijbasis. This is the Vedas. I'm not talking about ordinary living entities. These are the Vedas personified. And they have to go through 60,000, well, I don't know whether it's years or births, and that means celestial years of austerity in order for them to become qualified for things like that. And what to speak of so many others. There are many personalities who, during Lord Ramachandra's time, 2 million years ago, they wanted to have Lord Ramachandra as their wife. Lord Ramachandra says, okay, just hang on. When I come as Krishna, then we'll fulfill your benediction. In the meantime, continue what you're doing. That's 2 million years and of austerity. So it's a very difficult thing. But it becomes very easy by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's grace. Therefore, getting the grace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is really essential in order to be able to perfect this process. And Srila Prabhupada told us as much. He said, yeah, it's very easy. You chant 16 rounds without offense. You follow the regulative principles and you go back to Godhead in this life. There's controversy about that, sometimes even amongst members of ISKCON and sometimes amongst devotees who are either Gaudiya Vaishnavas who say, well, in your next lifetime, you know, you're Malechas, born, you don't have really the samskars. Your next life, you'll be born in India, and then you can continue your devotional service and then go back to Godhead. But that's not what Srila Prabhupada said. Srila Prabhupada said something different. So controversies always abound. But what I wanted to say is not that one should simply preach till you drop and neglect everything else, because my swarup is going to come up in any case. But devotees should also be able to do bhajan. In effect, that's what Srila Prabhupada wanted devotees to do when they went to Vrindavan and Mayapur, which is almost 10% of our Krishna consciousness, because when you go, you know, we go for 3 weeks or a month, and nowadays devotees even go for longer periods of time. Prabhupada did not want devotees to be just simply spending their time shopping or going in Loy Bazaar or other bazaars. Prabhupada didn't even actually emphasize for us so much going on parikrama. In Prabhupada's day, there was no way that devotees skip Bhagavatam class and go out on parikrama early. We were there because Prabhupada was giving class. And then afterwards, we would go out, and as far as I remember, in the parikramas that I attended, that we were going out every second day. But what did Prabhupada want us to do? Sadhu Sangha, chant, hear, chant more. And Srila Prabhupada asked us to do 24-hour kirtan, and I remember doing 24-hour kirtan. I remember in Krishna Balaram Mandir having to chant at 2 o'clock in the morning, myself and Kavi Chandra Maharaj. Hare Krishna. Anyway, it was just the two of us. So we had 2-hour shifts. So Prabhupada wanted his followers to also be able to do bhajan. Because yadashmasharam ridyabhatedam yadigrihamayanar harinamadhyayar, that ultimately, as one is progressing in Krishna consciousness, then there should be jivadoy Krishna nam, It's not only that you give mercy to conditioned souls and you encourage them in advancing in spiritual life or educate them about who they are, but Krishna Nam, but you should have a taste for chanting. That ultimate devotee should be able to sit and they should be able to chant 32 rounds, 64 rounds, 192 rounds. But that's our business, is to develop taste for chanting Hare Krishna. Today's Sunday. Last Sunday, just before I took rest, 9:30 at night, I just mentioned this to someone earlier, I got this message from two devotees. One is called Advaita, the other one's called Venugopal. One's 10 years old, the other one's 9 years old. And they said, yesterday, meaning the Saturday, we decided we're going to chant 64 rounds. So we got up at 3 o'clock, we came to Mangalarti, we sat with the devotees and chanted japa during the morning program. And I just finished my rounds, so now I'm going to go to sleep. And I asked the parents, I said, whose idea was this? They said, it was completely their idea. I don't know where I got it. And it didn't come from me, I didn't tell them. And they didn't tell them, they just, of their own, they heard about it, or they heard in class, or spoke to others, and so they got inspired. So, 9 years old, 9 year olds can chant 64 rounds. Who's chanted 64 rounds here? A lot of devotees. It's a good feeling. Who's chanted 192? It's very good. Once you chant 192, then 64 rounds is like, it's like breathing. But it's something that we should be able to do. And that's called bhajan. That ultimately, there's a balance between these two things. Krishna, our business is not that we're some kind of advertising agency where we tell everyone how great Krishna consciousness is, but we don't have it. That we should be actually personally embodying what Krishna consciousness is all about. And we don't want to be in a position like, for instance, the Christians are in, who say 2,000 years ago there was this perfect person. So, yes, here's Srila Prabhupada, he was a perfect person. But unfortunately, that person 2,000 years ago somehow or another was incapable of making any perfect persons or inspiring any other people to become perfect. So to say, have that type of attitude that, yes, Samacharya is perfect, but no one else is perfect, means actually he wasn't very much of an acharya because everything just stopped with him. So ultimately, both have to be there. And I was speaking with somebody the other day about that subject, that preaching and the burdens of preaching, and of course preaching also means management, because the easy part is to tell people about Krishna and the other part is to then take them all the way along and facilitate all the things that come along with making people Krishna conscious. It does detract, it does burden your mind. Prabhupada even says, you accept disciples, it can, unless you're a liberated soul, it will decrease your spiritual potency. And if you're a liberated soul, then you may get sick, you will get sick as a consequence of accepting the karma of others. And of course, it's not just gurus who accept karma. Parents accept karma. Leaders accept karma. Temple presidents accept karma. Everyone accepts karma. That's the way the material world works. And we got enough problems with our own karma, what to speak of other people's karma. So that makes the job of being Krishna consciousness even more. So there needs to be that balance. Devotees need to be able to preach, and you need to be able to also chant and hear. To sit down and read Srimad Bhagavatam. I may have mentioned it, Keshav Bharati Maharaj, my friend, last year, he took a vow to read Srimad Bhagavatam in 1 year. So he said it's 43 pages, and that's verse and translation. And he did it. He did it in 1 year. And this year he's doing it again. He's doing it a second time. 43 pages a day. So we have to be able to do that as well. And not that the issue is struggling to stay awake. Then what kind of preaching am I doing if I'm struggling to stay awake and chanting Hare Krishna or in Srimad Bhagavatam class or in reading Srila Prabhupada's books? So it's balance. It requires both things. And, you know, Srila Prabhupada, as much as he whipped us, in his own words, to distribute books, but at the same time he said that, but if you're not reading them, then what's the use of you distributing them? In other words, what are we... We're telling someone how great Krishna consciousness is, and where's the example? So we don't. We need to be able to do both things. So Odarya and Madhurya, and in that sense, Srila Prabhupada set that up. So everyone comes to Sridham Mayapur, and they chant and hear together, and then everyone goes to Vrindavan, and they chant and hear together as a Krishna conscious society. At that time, there was no real Kartik festival. Now Kartik festival tends to be very big. Many devotees mostly go to Mayapur, Gaur Purnima time, and then they go mostly to Vrindavan for Kartik. In any case, this is certainly an integral part of our life. And this practice of Krishna consciousness and giving Krishna consciousness, which we see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself did. He preached, this is in Navadvip, and then when he goes to South India, what Srila Prabhupada says is the most significant part of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela, that 6 years of his preaching Leela. But then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also stayed in one place for 18 years, and he chanted, and he was just simply absorbed in tasting Krishna now. So, yadasmasharam hridayabhateidam. Sukadeva Goswami says, and this is in the beginning, this is in the second canto, if you can't cry when you chant Hare Krishna, there's something wrong. And if you can't cry when you moved into the temple, that's all right. Although, ironically enough, the tendency for crying comes in the beginning because we haven't as yet committed any offenses. So devotees may have that experience that when you first come to Krishna consciousness, it's like, wow, if this is the beginning, I just can't imagine what's happening later on. But unfortunately, other obstacles may sometimes come in, of course, may not. It's not some kind of rule of thumb that they have to. They do. But then ultimately we need to purify those things, purify those obstacles. That again becomes a risk of a preaching movement, that we're all together, we're living together, and there's a good chance of attrition amongst Vaishnavas. So, yadi Vaishnava paradi uti hatimata. This then becomes a real hatimata, potential for really setting back our devotional creeper. What's the risk that you take in preaching? You live in very close quarters. That's why, in one sense, these Babajis, they move out. But, of course, they run into other types of pitfalls. So, but better that we do everything in the right way. So, ultimately, there's proper balance. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, but you approach Vrindavan through Navadvip. So he says, Kabe Gauravane Shuradini Tate Haratha Hakishna. When will I walk on the banks of the celestial Ganges chanting the name of Radha and Krishna? Then he says, Swapa Chagrihete. Then I will drink Pibo Saraswati Jal. I will drink the water of the Saraswati, which is the Jalangi. And I'll serve the residents of the dam, whatever their social status may be, and dekite, and gradually, when I come to realize that there's no difference between Navadvip and Vrindavan, then I will take birth as a gopi in Brajapur, in Barshana. And then he continues like that. So our access to Vrindavan is through Navadvip. Our access to Radha Krishna is through Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. What's very, very difficult otherwise, and the real example of that is Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Who's read Brihad Bhagavatamrita? Some devotees. It's an extraordinary book. We're all on a journey. This is the epitome of the journey. First part, but especially the second part. And if you read it, Gop Kumar, I mean, you can't even figure out the time span that he's trying to actually find Gopal. He's got his mantra. He's got this Gopal mantra, very similar mantra to what we're chanting. But he's going through creations. You can't even figure out how long it's taking him until he's finally getting back home, back to Godhead. So what Prabhupada says is going to take us, and we consider it a long time, say 75 years, that happens in one lifetime. Gop Kumar said, and one thing that is very noticeable by dint of its absence is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There's no Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the pastime. Sanatana Goswami wrote it by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's instruction, but it was this, it's a historical event that's revealed to him by Jaimini Rishi. And so he wrote it. He wrote it down. And there's only one verse in the whole book that makes the reference to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. For it's preceded by a verse. He says, if you ever meet Srimati Radharani, he says, then by her grace, you'll be able to get the devotion which qualifies you for service to Gopal. Or, and the next verse says, if you ever meet Krishna, who's in the mood of Srimati Radharani, then from him you can get that kind of bhakti. And this is Nard talking. So it's very easy for us, and that's why Sridhar Mayapur and Navadvipa is so important. That's why Chandradoya Mandir is there, and of course the TOVP, Temple of Vedic Planetarium. Actually, the person who should be talking is Jnanivas. It's the personification of Sridhar Mayapur. I was just listening for the third time, 1977 conversation tapes, and this is in Mayapur. Tamal Krishna Maharaj has sort of just arrived and says, Prabhupada, you know those brothers worshipping the deities? And Prabhupada interrupts, yes, they are. I just have to paraphrase. They're first class. There's no complaint about their service. So they were there right from the very beginning. And so both of these, the importance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu cannot be underestimated. And therefore, we really need to place great emphasis on our service and worship to Sridhar Mayapur, and therefore, according to Lord Nityananda's prediction, build that TOVP, and simultaneously we need to also practice Krishna consciousness. It's not enough to just preach about it or talk about it. We have to be the personifications of it. Hare Krishna. Early on, Shruti mentioned about these books are being available outside. Also, as I mentioned the other day, this Urmila Devi Dasi's wonderful Manashiksha. Well, it's not her Manashiksha, it's Raghunath Das Goswami's Manashiksha, but some Vaishnavs have also added some commentary to that. And a very important book in terms of knowing actually how to do bhajan and what it means to control your mind, because unless you have something to focus your mind on and learn how to control your mind, then it becomes very difficult. But Krishna says, bhajanti imam, and he talks about bhajan throughout Bhagavad Gita.